Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Jenna Cameron, John Rich. It is 94 WIP. Ray Dininger with us in just a moment. And this segment right now, extended segment, is brought to us by the Goodwill Donation Center. Start the new year lighter, brighter, and doing something good. 35 Goodwill donation locations throughout New Jersey and Philadelphia. Make sure you visit goodwillnj.org for locations. I'll tell you one thing, John. The 76ers better win their game tonight. They're playing the Nets, who we all see as a lesser team. Now, they got Kyrie Irving back recently, but they're certainly not a great team. Games at home. Sixers have been, to their credit, very good at home this year. And they are definitely reeling in a way that they really have not reeled for a couple of years. I mean, they're playing. I mean, we talked yesterday about, you know, is it time to fire Brett Brown soon? Is it time to fire Brett Brown now? Is it time to trade Ben Simmons soon? I mean, the masses are unhappy and with good reason. And so certainly, you know, as they get ready to play a game tonight versus the Brooklyn Nets, man, the Sixers are in desperate need of a victory. Desperate need.
I'll say. I'm trying to have confidence. And I saw a spark in Ben in the first half of the game, most recently, where it felt like, you know, we've seen in the past, he's responded to criticism and gone out there and elevated.
Yeah, but he still just does his thing. He plays more aggressive, but
aggressive, but when he's yelling after dunks and doing that stuff like that, that's what I hope for, right? Well, like, maybe we'll get more.
I hope for a jump shot. That.
Well, we're not going to get that.
All right, let's welcome in the Diddy. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, on a great day with a big old smile on his face as Harold Carmichael, of course, gets the call this morning for the Hall to the NFL Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, a Hall of Famer himself, Mr. Ray Dininger. Ray Diddy, how are you, sir?
Couldn't be better, Joe. Couldn't be better.
Ray, I see the smile. It's glowing. Tell us all, Ray, when you heard the news this morning, how did you hear the news? What was your first thought?
Well, it's funny because I was with Harold last night. Ironically enough, I was with Harold and Dick Vermeil last night. There was a WIP event at Nebraska Brazilian Steakhouse up in Horsham.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm dying for Brazilian Steakhouse. I've never had it.
Great.
Anyway, that's a
great spot, by the way.
I need to check it out.
Well, you should. You should. And so we were up there last night, and talk about perfect timing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have the perfect timing. And Harold was, you know, I fully understood exactly where, you know, what he was going through, because everybody's coming up to him, and they're all saying, well, tomorrow's the big day, and are you nervous, and you know, how do you feel? And, oh, we know you're going to get in. And what do you say? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, reminded me a lot of the conversations I used to have with Tommy McDonald.
Sure.
You know, where Tommy said, you know, I don't know how to feel. I mean, I'm excited, but I don't want to get my hopes up too high.
Sure.
And Harold was in exactly that same place last night. He said, I haven't slept in a week. I know tomorrow's the day, and I know I'm not going to sleep tonight, and I'm sure he didn't. But I was so happy when I woke up this morning. First thing I did was I clicked on the internet to see, and it was posted, and I was just elated. I was elated for Harold, and I was elated for Steve Sable.
Yep.
I mean, those are the two guys that I was really rooting for, and they both got in. The only thing that could have made this week better in my mind would have been if Dick Vermeil had gotten in
for
over the weekend. If he had gone 3-for-3, to me, that would have been just wonderful, and I think totally deserved. And I'm still holding out hope that Dick's day will come, and I think it will. But Dick is such a rare person. You know, I said to him, I said, you know, I'm sorry. You so deserve this. And he said, hey, listen. He said, I'm just excited for Harold.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I didn't really expect to get in. I kind of thought this was going to happen. All I'm thinking about now is getting Harold in tomorrow.
Great. Yeah.
And he said, and I think he means it, he said, Harold's like a son to me. And I know Dick has said that probably about a lot of guys that played for him because he had those kinds of relationships with his players. But Harold was really a special case. And they have a remarkable relationship. And I know that there's nobody, perhaps next to Harold and his wife, B, that feels better about this news than Dick Vermeil does.
Yeah, it's, you know what, and I'll tell you this, one of the things that hit me is it's probably, we could do the math, it's probably about a similar length of time that Richie had to wait for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Because Richie, stopped playing in the early 60s. Mets 62 team is last team. Richie got in 95 when Schmitty and Richie got in 95. So that's 33 years. And Harold, of course, stopped playing in the early 80s. So this one's even longer. Yeah. This is close to 40 years.
Yeah, long time.
That's a long time to wait. Did you think that, Ray, that Cower and Jimmy Johnson deserved to get in?
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I don't have a problem with either Bill.
I don't
Jimmy.
Either. Just bummed that it's not Vermeil, but yes. But that they did deserve to get in.
Exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
I think they're both worthy. I do. If you ask me straight up about Dick, I would put Dick in before either of those guys, to be honest with you. But and I feel badly that it didn't happen for him. But to say that they don't deserve to be in, I don't agree with that. I think they do.
I'll tell you what I did find a little weird and unfortunate for Vermeil in this case, Ray, was the Cower, who coached into this century, and Jimmy Johnson, who coached in the late 90s, were both considered sort of this centennial class, like these are the older guys group. And instead of being more modern era, like why is Bill Cower not part of the modern era guys considered?
True.
And it kind of bummed me out that I feel like the way they were viewed, unfortunately, bumped out Vermeil. Because I don't understand why Bill Cower, who coached the Steelers in the 05 Super Bowl, and then I think for one more year, 06, if I remember right, like, how is he part of the old guy? How is he in the same group as Vermeil? And I mean, granted, actually, now that I think about it, Vermeil coaching in the early 2000s also, mid-2000s. It just struck me as kind of odd, the Cower. But again, like I just said, Vermeil actually coached probably to about 05, 06 also, now that I think about it.
Yeah, but I think they're both fine. I mean, I have no complaints with that. I just think Dick was more deserving. I think that Dick, when I tried to write a letter of support for Dick to make his case, the way I tried to do it was I said, you have to view his career in its full context. If you just look at his straight up career one loss record, it's just a little over 500. So if you look at those raw numbers, you'd say, that's not that impressive. But I think what you have to do is you have to look at what he inherited, the history of the teams he inherited, and how he rebuilt them, and in the time in which it took to rebuild them. I mean, the Eagles were an absolutely dead-in-the-water team. They had one winning season in 12 years when he gets hired, and they didn't have any draft choices.
And this is before free agency.
And there's no free agency.
So you can't just pluck and pluck and pluck.
Yeah, he had no free agency. He had no draft choices. They did not have a first-round pick in his first 3 years as the coach. There was one draft where they didn't pick till the sixth round. There was another draft where they didn't pick till the seventh round because they had all been traded away. So he inherits a team with nothing, that had been nothing but lose for more than a decade, a team with no draft picks, and it takes him to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then he sits out for 14 years and comes back and takes over the Rams, who had been the losingest team in the National Football League for a decade. The Rams had the worst record in the NFL for a decade. He comes back after 14 years away and in 3 years wins a Super Bowl with that team. So, I mean, I think if you just look at the raw one-loss record, you look at it and say, not special. But if you look at it in context and see that he did this amazing rebuilding job, not once but twice with two different teams, I mean, to me, it's, I don't know how you don't put him in.
Yeah.
So, full confession here. Look, I've known Dick forever. You know, I have a very good personal relationship with him. I consider him a dear friend. But I think I can step away from that and be objective enough and say, if I just look at his case, to me, it's an absolute Hall of Famer. And then, you know, and after the layoff, I mean, Jimmy Johnson had the long layoff and came back with Miami and didn't win at all. You know, Dick has the long layoff, comes back with a worse team in St. Louis and wins a Super Bowl in 3 years. So I'm still of the belief that it's going to happen. You know, now that they've had a chance to actually see Dick's case and hear it, and his conversation, his name is now kind of in the room. I'm still hoping that it's going to happen for him. It didn't happen this year, but hopefully it does next.
A great day to have Ray Dittinger in studio with us for an entire hour. Let's go to the phones, 888-729-9494, and talk to Mario. What's up, Mario?
Hey, guys, and hi, Ray. And let me tell Ray that I'm going to wear Harold's set number 17 jersey at the game here on San Francisco on Sunday. So I want to let him know.
That's great.
And that is awesome. And you know what's also great, Mario, if you remember when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, Harold's jersey is the one that Brent Celek wore in the parade.
That was pretty cool.
And that was a great homage to the Eagles legends and specifically Harold himself, who Celek knew so well from being in the organization when Harold was part of it. You know, Celek was coming through it.
Okay, I hope Fox doesn't cut me off though, like they did with the hit on the Foles, on Carson. So I'll have it with my Eagle colors flying. But I'm looking forward to that. But anyway, I want to talk a little bit about Howie. Me and Ray talked a little bit last week. But my thing about Howie is this: he is he's an executive. As far as a GM, Mr. Lurie is going to have to bring in someone with the credentials like Dorsey. Remember, John Dorsey just got cut from Cleveland, but let's go back to Kansas City. He built that team with Andy. He also built Cleveland before they let him go. So one thing I know about Mr. Dorsey is he knows talent. And like Ray explained to me last week that Howie only goes by what the scouts bring him. So apparently the scouts aren't good enough. They're not doing a good enough job because basically – they come out here on the West Coast and they look at a couple guys out here and they make their draft choices. Now, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, he wouldn't even have made any of the teams in the SEC, the first teams in the SEC conference. He wouldn't have made it. And then you got Pumphrey. And then, come on,
Not defined just by that. I mean, there's the Sanders pick. There's the Goddard pick. Look, it's been all over the place. But there's certainly been some really bad ones.
Right.
And Arcega-Whiteside looks bad.
You need to get fresh. You need to get fresh people in there. You need to get fresh people on the scouting team. And then also you have to build. You know, Howie's not a builder. You need to build. You know, have young talent ready. He's not a builder. You can't go out there, you know, get this guy 20, 29 years old. He gets hurt 2 years later, and you're stuck with a bad contract.
Yeah, no, that was a bad one. All right, Mario, give me a famous first. Which one do you got?
Okay, Ray's going to like this one. The original Miracle in the Meadowlands, November 1978. Who called that game? Sonny Jurgensen and Don Crickey. The one and only Miracle.
Mario.
Other stuff they talk about, zero. Okay, right. Take care, guys.
Herman Edwards, 1978, helps the Eagles make the playoffs that year. Love that answer right there.
Yeah, that was some day.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
Ray, a lot of conversation today about Howie. John has been doubting on Howie. It's going on some time now, but especially, you know, this particular year, and there were mistakes. I think there were more mistakes made this season than last season, and certainly he hasn't had nearly the same batting average in either season that he had in 2017. I'll just ask you a simple question, and it is our Twitter poll question of the day brought to us by the casino at Delaware Park, where everyone can watch and wager on all the pro football playoff action at Delaware Park Sportsbook. Lottery agent for the Delaware Lottery, must be 21 to play. Ray, the question to you is, we've asked everyone today, do you believe in Howie Roseman as the general manager of the Eagles? What would be your answer to that, and why?
My answer to that would be, I guess it depends on how you define the role of general manager and the responsibilities therein. I do think Howie is very good at the administrative aspects of football. You know, I think he's very good with the salary cap. I think he's very good negotiating contracts, finding ways to create room where no one ever thought there could be room.
Yeah.
I think that in terms of managing and massaging the dollars,
he's the best.
Which is, I mean, that's a big part of the National Football League today. I think he's as good as there is. I think the question of how good of a personnel evaluator is a very open question. I think if you pair Howie with his strengths with a really good talent evaluator and personnel guy, I think you might have the perfect front office. If you ask me, are you talking about him now being all of the business guy plus the chief personnel guy, then I would say, well, I'm not so sure. But, most front offices are constructed that way now. They have the one guy who's the contract guy, a guy who's a lawyer or an accountant or something like that, and then they have a personnel department that deals with the players. I think that tends to be the power structure in most organizations, and I think that's the one that works. You pair Howie with the right talent guy, I think you're pretty good. But if you're just going to make him run everything, then I don't think then I would think you could run into problems.
Why is it that Howie has final say on all decisions, Ray? I mean, there should be, in my mind, a split between the financial, contractual, and the on-field, the scouting football players.
Well, the simple answer is because someone has to. and he's who Jeffrey Lurie's chosen. Now, whether you think that should be different, it could be. But, I mean, you know, like, so should the Joe Douglas guy have final say? You know, not that it's him anymore, but that guy? I mean, someone has to have final. You can't just all hold hands. Someone has to have final say.
Yeah, it's nice if everybody agrees. And it's nice if you all sit down there and you come to a consensus that is everybody
your
on board?
Impression
yeah, that doesn't happen all that often.
And we will never know the answer to, you know, every decision that's been made, of course. But, you know, the draft, I'm just thinking of the draft in particular, some of the free agency stuff, too. Has Howie been overruling people? You know, like, it just seems like things were so great and every decision was golden a couple years back. And maybe some of this is just pure luck. You know, you don't know the way a guy's going to materialize as an Eagle in a new uniform and in a new year. But now when things, you know, the track record has been choppy lately.
Mm-hmm.
What can you identify as, like, what's different?
It's impossible to know that, right? Right. I mean, the idea of who actually...
Is it just bad luck?
Who recommended it when Howie overrode a guy? They don't let you know.
No, you don't really
know. I feel like Howie, after the Super Bowl, acted like a different Howie. You know? I mean, he'd been through an arduous trek.
The only thing I thought was different, John...
From the closet
I thought it was loose.
To the top of the world and the executive of the year.
Yeah.
And he was all about, you know, there was a new level of confidence.
I thought he was looser in interviews.
Yes.
But whether he was... But
a new
he was...
level of confidence that bordered on overconfidence at times. And
yeah, I don't agree with that.
I don't know. Well, you don't have to.
No,
it's
I know.
Just
I'm
a,
just
it's
saying
just
I don't.
Opinion.
I understand.
We don't know if that translated to Howie in making decisions, saying, Joe Douglas, I know that you are a great evaluator of talent. I know you like this guy. I like this guy better. I don't know if that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something deep down inside me that says maybe that happened.
Well, where do you think the voting results came today on Twitter, John? Do you believe in Howie Roseman as the GM of the Eagles? A, yes, B, no. Where do you think people came in?
Yes. I think it's going to be overwhelmingly yes.
It is. 77% say yes, they believe in Howie Roseman. Let's go. By the way, it's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia. Joe DeKemmer, John Ritchie, Ray Dittinger from the Tasty Cake Studios.
I think that is for the wrong reasons. I think that is for your main reason, which is Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Mm.
I think you have to evaluate, just like every player is evaluated on a game-by-game basis. Let's break this down and look at the trends. Look at what Howie has done for us lately. It's not been good. And not just personnel-wise, contractually.
Yeah, there have been
doing the money stuff.
There have been some
he
issues.
Hasn't been
sure.
great.
Let's go to Colin in Delaware. What's up, Colin?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Ray, honored to talk to you. And Joe and John, honored too. I think I didn't say that last time, and I kind of
That's very
you.
Kind, Colin.
Oh, thank you, Colin.
Appreciate
Extremely
it. Kind.
Why I was calling, this penalty on the cheating in baseball with the Astros, it's, from what I heard, it's $5 million for draft picks and pretty much firing your general manager.
Well, not firing. I mean, the penalty was a suspension for a year for the general manager and the manager. The owner chose to fire them.
That is. I mean, a drop in the bucket when it comes to a World Series that made you $50 million worth of playoff money in a couple, 2 or 3 years worth of playoff runs that
and
made
so
you
so much more.
I
than
mean,
that.
It's ridiculous how much of a drop in the bucket, and it's not going to stop any cheating in baseball. It's if you can get 3 years like the Astros. Well, who even knows how long they've been doing it, but. Get 3 years like the Astros did and just come out with it.
I know. I hear you.
Well, the word is everyone does it, too. And
not to this extent, though. They do something, but this
was more elaborate.
Yeah, much more elaborate and technologically driven.
And the trash cans? I mean, how do we not hear trash cans? That's the craziest thing of all. Like, they were using – that's not something that, like, you hear on a regular basis at a baseball game. They were using trash cans?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they had a signal somehow, and that was one of the methods of signaling, you know, what's coming. Hey, look, Colin, there's so much to it. I think the players got off preposterously light. I mean, this was something that the commissioner's own report referred to as a, quote, player-driven initiative. And so now it's player-driven, yet no player gets suspended. You know, I think the player got off light, the players, and I also think, you know, you can make a strong case that if you're going to say, well, okay, what's beneath you is your purview and therefore your responsibility, well, then what about the owner of the Astros? I mean, what's up with the manager and the general manager just get freaking nailed, and I think they deserve to be, but the players get nothing and the owner gets nothing.
They want to sound like there's a scapegoat, and it's don't get me wrong, these managers got what they deserve, but they just want to make it sound like it was all the managers, and it's not even.
Yeah,
close to the game.
I think there's been inconsistency in the ruling. And by the way, the $5 million fine, just so you know, is the maximum fine that they were allowed to be fined. So, I mean, just, you know, maybe they changed that rule, but that's a rule they had in place. Colin, give me a famous first.
How about Dolly the Sheep, the first cloned mammal?
Oh, Dolly the Sheep.
Yeah, good one.
Good one, Colin.
Hey, so the A.J. Hinch role in all this, he has to be a sympathetic figure to more than just me, right?
No.
No, he's not?
No.
Yeah, I think
the fact that
he was
the fact
in on
that
it.
He tried to yeah, he was
he
in on it, but he also
it.
Tried to stop
oh,
it.
Oh, come on. Did he, John, he tried, quote unquote, to stop it. If he's the
That's
manager
he
of the team, if he wanted it to stop, he could have stopped it.
He broke the machinery twice.
If he's the manager of the team.
On purpose.
He knew it was going on. He could have stopped it.
And he knew that the guys wanted
wow.
to do it. And he was caught between doing the right
Stop
thing
it.
And doing what
so,
the team
so,
wanted to do.
And he did the wrong thing. That's it. End of story. He did the wrong thing.
I'm in between both you guys. I think he's sympathetic, John, in that you know he didn't want it to happen. We also know whether it's peer pressure or however you want to refer to it in life, people get dragged into things that they don't want. And so from that standpoint, yes, I'll say from my vantage point, I think there's some sympathy there. At the same time, though, I agree with James. It's his responsibility in the end to stop it. And he didn't. I mean, he was aware of it.
Well, he tried to at least twice.
Right, but he didn't.
He said he tried
he
to
didn't,
stop.
He didn't do enough.
He didn't do enough.
Ray, what's your opinion? The whole thing, big deal, small deal, properly handled by the commissioner, improperly handled. Some guys got off light. Like, where do you come down on this whole thing?
I think it's a huge deal. I think it's a huge scandal. I mean, I've read all the details about how they did it. It's still, I still can't. How did they get that information relayed in the period of time between pitches? I don't know how in a practical sense how this thing was applied and how they made it work. I don't know.
They banged on the trash can.
Yeah, and they were using
somebody's got to see the sign, read the sign, and relay the information down to get it done so that the guy in the box knows what's coming. You're talking about. I know pitchers don't work fast these days, but they work faster than that. This was pretty sophisticated technology.
Well, that's the key. Yeah. It was. Technology. I mean, the reality is, without the cell phone, without the camera, you can't accomplish all this. But if there's a guy in that video replay room that is communicating to someone in the dugout via cell phone, who then instantaneously
says fastball,
yeah,
and then the guy hits the trash can.
Like, yeah, you can actually do that in a second and a half. Fastball, bang the trash can. Okay, the batter just heard it. So it actually, I agree with you. It's remarkable. But it also is kind of logical. It's not logical if you don't have a cell phone, you don't have this, you don't have that, you don't have video, but they had all that.
You know, I remember reading a story years ago, before even all this came out, that the most famous home run in baseball history, the Bobby Thompson home run, the sign was stolen.
Yes. Well, that's true.
Somebody was relaying, somebody was out in the scoreboard with binoculars, saw this, read the sign, sent the message in that Thompson knew Branca is getting ready to throw you a fastball.
Right.
And there goes Giants win the pennant. One of the most famous home runs, if not the most famous home run in baseball history, came off a stolen sign.
Yep.
So this has been out there. I think John was just mentioned something that I was thinking reading all this. You know, I do think the owner is culpable in this. If you have to assume that you bear the ultimate responsibility, you're the owner of the team and you bear ultimate responsibility for what happens underneath you, then I don't know that you can get off scot-free here. And if the manager really did feel the way he felt, which he claims that he didn't, he knew about this, he didn't approve of it, he wanted it stopped, then I think at some point the manager's got to go to the owner, doesn't he? Doesn't he have to go to the owner and say, hey, listen, you know what we're doing here? I mean, this is illegal. We're breaking all the rules. We're going certainly against the spirit of the game, and the integrity of baseball is a question here. I've tried to get this thing stopped. Players won't go along with me. The general manager won't go along with me. You're the boss. You're the owner of the franchise. You got to come down with me and tell them that this stops today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if he brought the owner in on this and told him what was there, and I'm I'm your manager, and I'm not down with this even a little bit, you know, then the owner's in a position where he can step in and tell everybody, knock it off.
Yep.
And it never went there.
I mean, I'm disappointed on so many levels. And again, one of which is I really blame the commissioner, who otherwise did a pretty darn good job. He did lay some hammers down here. But for him to give immunity to the players for their testimony against the manager and the general manager, I find disgraceful. I mean, it is, in his own words, a, quote, player-driven initiative. And they all get off? By the way, one other thing. My favorite part of all this, because there's very little of this I like, but there was one part of this I liked quite a lot, and it's what the Los Angeles Dodgers did. So the Dodgers are clearly not happy, but they've been asked by the commissioner not to comment. Everyone's been asked not to comment. That's active. You got former players talking, but you don't have many current guys talking because, you know, and teams have been told, zip it, don't comment. So here was the tweet that the Los Angeles Dodgers official Twitter account put out. This is about 36 hours ago, two nights ago, late at night. Here's what their tweet said. Because remember, they lost a Game 7 of the World Series to the Astros.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what the Dodgers official Twitter account said. Quote, all clubs have been asked by Major League Baseball not to comment on today's punishment of the Houston Astros, as it's inappropriate to comment on discipline imposed on another club. The Dodgers have also been asked not to comment on any wrongdoing during the 2017 World Series, and we will have no further comment at this time.
Hmm.
They're letting you know they ain't happy.
No.
And that's awesome.
They shouldn't be happy.
They shouldn't be happy.
They should be angry.
They should be very angry. 888-729-9494. All right, what's the call with the offensive coordinator situation with the Eagles? And how much should John DeFilippo be? Should he be the number one name in line? We'll ask Ray Dininger that and much more up ahead. Rock the phone calls as well. Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie on WIP.
It's no secret. I'm Philly proud, having played here and now working here. I love the home team. I also choose the home team at Parks Casino as my sports book of choice. They're right here in Bucks County, and they're the only sports book run by the number one casino in all of Pennsylvania. Are you ready for the conference matchups this weekend? Tennessee plus 7.5 points against Kansas City. You got the rough and tumble, run it, shorten the game against the throw the ball everywhere offense. I think the magic carpet ride ends for the Titans. That's just me. Green Bay plus 7.5 in San Francisco. These lines have remained at 7.5, and these are gigantic lines. But I think San Francisco is that good. So many ways to wager. You got spreads, props, parlays, teasers, live in-game betting. And so many of you great Philly fans have already joined me in the home team at Parks Casino and Sportsbook right here in the Delaware Valley. Download the Parks Casino Sportsbook app now or go to parkscasino.com/PA and use the promo code BIRDS to get your first risk-free bet of $500. Your risk-free bet is refunded as account credit. Use the promo code BIRDS and get your first risk-free bet of $500. You must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.